morning and welcome to Thursday Morning Roundtable. My name is Sandra Barrett, and on behalf of University College of Syracuse University, it's my pleasure to welcome you here this morning, or this evening if you're listening on the radio on Sunday. Today we're going to be talking about the Onondaga Historical Association, sort of past, present, and future. But I also wanted to give you a heads up about the next few weeks. Next week we'll be talking with Dr. Nirav Shah. He's the New York State Health Commissioner. I had asked him to come and talk about New York State's Medicaid redesign, and that will be the focus of his talk, although of course the health department is involved in all sorts of things, and you may want to bone up and have some questions ready to ask Dr. Shah. The following week, we'll be talking with Bill Broad. Mr. Broad is the publisher of the Syracuse New Times and Family Times. This will be his first visit to the roundtable. So again, interesting media mogul in central New York. And sneak preview, March 7th, Bob Spitzer, professor of political science from SUNY Cortland, will be here. We know him well from the Ivory Tower Half Hour, but he'll be flying solo on March 7th. And the topic will be gun control. So we'll be talking about this new state law and related issues. So that's the next few weeks. Right now, it's my pleasure to introduce one of our newest TMR regulars, Dave Michael. And you all know Dave as someone who has worked for the city for a number of years, and I had the pleasure of working with him also. So Dave, thank you.
Happy Valentine's Day. Sandy forgot. It's an honor to introduce today's speaker, Greg Tripoli, director of the Onondaga Historic Association. Every so often, a newcomer comes to the city to bring us new energy, and certainly Greg is one of those people. He came back to Central New York to become director of OHA in February of 08. In 5 years of his leadership, many exciting things have happened at OHA. In particular, OHA is now literally more open to the community with windows onto Montgomery Street. Greg is one of the founding members of the Cathedral Square Development Corporation, which is coordinating the revitalization of this important downtown neighborhood. Now he's leading the effort to revitalize the fort on Onondaga Lake to better recognize our Native American neighbors. I suspect you'll be hearing more about that. On a personal note, I want to tell you OHA is a great place to hold a wedding, and that Greg is a great wedding host. Greg Tripoli.
Thank you, Dave. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
In 1862, as more and more Central New Yorkers were playing pivotal roles in a devastating civil war, there was a realization, a general realization locally, that history was being made. There was also an awareness that the founders of our young community were beginning to pass away, and with them, the stories and the mementos of the documenting the beginning of Syracuse and Onondaga County were in danger of being lost forever. Community leaders decided that it was time to create an organization that was charged with collecting and preserving that history that they were witnessing and experiencing. That organization is the Onondaga Historical Association. It was officially chartered by a special act of the New York State Legislature on April 29th of 1863, which makes this year our official 150th anniversary, making OHA the oldest cultural organization in Onondaga County and one of the oldest continually operating one of the oldest continually operating organizations in the country. Those claims should be a major source of pride for our local community that has supported OHA in good times and in bad over the past century and a half. OHA, at its core, is an educational institution. Education informs everything we do, from our exhibits to our programs, to our publications, and even to our products in our retail store. In the past 150 years, OHA has become a community anchor institution and has amassed a serious collection of well over a million items. Many of those are three-dimensional. Our collections include documents such as the General Association for the Liberties of America. This is the very first document of the very first representational government in New York. It was signed in May of 1775. It created a unified response among the colonies to the British actions at Lexington and Concord. It firmly placed New York in the Revolutionary War, paved the way for the Declaration of Independence, which was signed little more than a year later. Referred to as the Bill of Rights of New York, it is probably the most important historical document in the history of the state. Paintings, we have lots of paintings and drawings, including the largest private collection of portraits by Charles Loring Eliot, universally known, acknowledged by everyone as the most renowned, accomplished portraitist of the 19th century. Photographs, hundreds of thousands of photographs, including the earliest known photograph of Frederick Douglass. Objects, like one of my favorites, the Confederate flag that was taken from Savannah at the fall of Savannah by Onondaga County soldiers, currently on loan to the New York State Museum for a large exhibit that they have there of New York State's role in the Civil War. Clothing, an amazing clothing collection, everything from a huge collection of military uniforms to couture gowns from the society ladies of Syracuse and Onondaga County through the ages, including some beautiful wedding dresses that you can see now and in an exhibit that we have called Love and Marriage, which is in collaboration with the opera's production of The Marriage of Figaro. So these wedding dresses are from the 1800s all the way up through the 1960s. And many, many, many more items in our collections, which have informed exhibits, programs, and publications on a local, state, national, and international scale. In the past 4 or 5 years, which I have some personal knowledge of the workings at OHA, we have developed a new strategic plan that first and foremost concentrates on helping to strengthen our urban core. And that, of course, begins with our building on Montgomery Street in downtown Syracuse. In the past few years, we've spent over $600,000 on our historic building in renovations and restorations. We built a new research center and library, upgraded our administrative offices and many other parts of our building with new flooring and paint and furniture. As Dave mentioned, we restored the facade of our historic building, adding 8 new street-level windows that enhances the pedestrian experience on Montgomery Street. We took care of long-standing plumbing issues. We have a new main line coming in, and we installed new separated sewer and drainage lines. We installed a state-of-the-art fire suppression through our entire 55,000-square-foot building, upgraded our security system and our lighting system. We began construction of a backroom tour. Syracuse China portion of that is completed, and soon in May we'll be opening a new part of that that deals with the Magic Toy Shop and our toy collection. We've remodeled almost the entire interior of our museum, establishing a new permanent exhibit on the history of Onondaga County called Heart of New York, and we've extended the temporary galleries in our museum, so we are now over 50% temporary gallery space. Last year alone, we had 12 temporary exhibits in our building. Our strategic plan is also very focused on increasing our commitment to community engagement and outreach. That begins, for us, with publishing. We've published an average of 1 book every year for the past 4 years. We've expanded and improved our History Highlights magazine, which is now a 60-page glossy magazine. That's a great member benefit. When you're a member of OHA, you get that magazine twice a year. We also are regular contributors to the Post Standard. We anchor the back of the magazine, the Great Central New York, the Good Life magazine. We contribute to many other articles and publications, including a new collaboration with the Business Journal. Many others also use our research center, our collections, to inform their publications, such as a new book that we'll be launching soon in March by Dr. Joe Demento. He's a professor from the University of California at Irvine. He's been at OHA in the Research Center for the past 3 years working on a book on elevated highways and how they affect cities. So timing is important. We've also recently contributed to a new book by William Marco on the Jewish community of the 15th Ward called A Place That Lives Only in Memory. And we'll be launching also this spring a new book that we worked with on Christy Casciano, Lou Galino, and Tim Fox on Syracuse's great television history. Collaborations. OHA is all about collaborating, mostly with our art and cultural heritage partners in an industry that contributes over $130 million to the local economy. For the most part, what we do is provide historic perspective to add value to the products of these organizations, and it does not cost them anything. OHA takes the responsibility for funding these projects and for finding sponsors. Currently, we have an exhibit up at Syracuse Stage in collaboration with their production of Two Trains Running by August Wilson. If you haven't seen it, it's a phenomenally good production, as are most of their productions. We have exhibits up at the Onondaga County Public Library throughout branches of the library that speak to their local history department and also work with their literacy mission by providing reading lists that collaborate with those exhibits in some way. We have a painting or two at the Everson right now, and an exhibit at the Everson. As I mentioned, we have an exhibit up that collaborates with the opera's production of The Marriage of Figaro. And by the way, I suggest you all go to see that. There's, if any of you saw La Traviata last year, there was a soprano in there who was absolutely amazing, and she plays the role of the Contessa in The Marriage of Figaro. It's one of my favorite operas by Mozart, and it'll be worth it just to go and hear her sing again. We are collaborating with the Warehouse Gallery on a new exhibit by Ben Faga, an artist from London. As I mentioned, we have about a truckload of artifacts at the New York State Museum in collaboration with their exhibit. We also have four large paintings that are on loan to the Capitol building on the second floor, which is open to the public, in an exhibit that talks about the great history of New York State. We're branching out into television and to documentary production. This will allow us to reach a larger audience than we have ever been able to reach before. OHA was a founder of the Cathedral Square Neighborhood Association. We conceived the hanging flower baskets that you see. Our programs also fund a good portion of that project. That's a collaborative project with the Downtown Committee of Syracuse. I want to thank them for all of their help in getting that established. Since we hung those flower baskets from the light poles in Cathedral Square, five other neighborhood areas in the city have followed suit. So this spring, by shortly after Memorial Day, you will see hanging flower baskets throughout the majority of the city in Syracuse. We provide an average of about 140 educational programs per year. And we have more off-site exhibits than ever before in our history. Currently, OHA has exhibits in everywhere from City Hall to the County Courthouse to the Century Club, the McCarthy Building, War Memorial, St. Joseph's Hospital Health Center, Syracuse Home Association, YMCA, United Way, Ark of Onondaga, Time Warner Cable, Testone Marshall and DeSenza, SUNY ESF, OCC, Krause Hospital, and many, many more, all of which have been established in the last 4 or 5 years. Our outreach audience has increased over 64% in the past year. And due to the windows, the temporary exhibits, and the other things that I'll get to in a second that we've done to help create a destination experience on Montgomery Street, our in-house museum attendance over the past year has increased well over 200%. Part of our strategic plan also includes economic development initiatives. This is how we can use historic perspective to add tangible and direct benefits to our economic development of our community. We are concentrating on heritage tourism. I am the chair of the governor's project called Path Through History, which you will all be hearing about very soon for the Central New York region. We also listened to the community. We gave the community what it said it wanted. The community said that in order to encourage it to come downtown more often, the top four things that it wanted were cheaper parking, more restaurants, more stores, and fewer empty storefronts. So we worked with the city to create a parking deal for people who park in the garage that services our building on the corner of Montgomery and Fayette Street. So for 2 hours, there's a you pay just 50 cents per half hour up to a max of 2 hours. That's cheaper than any meter, any lot, or any garage anywhere else in the city. There was an empty storefront next to our building, empty for about 6 years. And we worked very, very hard and helped convert that empty storefront into what is now a very critically acclaimed great restaurant named Parisa, history-themed restaurant. The chef just won Chef of the Year from the Culinary Federation. The restaurant now ranks number one in Syracuse on TripAdvisor.com. I encourage all of you to come downtown and check out Parisa Restaurant. We also established a new retail store, taking advantage of the street presence that we have with our new windows. It's a very large store that offers custom, unique, high-quality products that you can only get at OHA. And every time you buy a product, and I just happen to be wearing one of our handmade silk ties that is actually taken from the 1930 Franklin Automobile Catalog. When you buy a product from our store, our gift gallery, you also get the backstory on that product. You get the history behind that product, which adds value to that product. And remember, whenever you buy a product at OHA, you're not funding some retail magnate's villa in the south of France. You are supporting the educational programs and the mission of the Onondaga Historical Association. We've developed projects to increase our earned income, realizing that we need to take responsibility ourselves for helping to make ourselves more sustainable. We've taken a more entrepreneurial approach to nonprofit management, and now earned income is one of our largest sources of revenue for OHA. These include customized exhibits for local companies and organizations that highlight their great history and the contributions that they've made not only to their industry, but to their own community. Licensing agreements for the use of our image and consulting services. We've added over $450,000 to our endowment and our portfolio investments over the past 5 years. However, also in the past 5 years, we have taken on some of the largest collections in OHA's 150-year history, like Syracuse China, 140 years of that company in 6 tractor trailer loads. Syracuse Symphony Orchestra, 50 years of one of our great cultural amenities in this community. New Process Gear, Judaic Heritage Center, First Presbyterian Church, many from the Post Standard, countless smaller collections. Almost all of these collections have come to us due to the economic difficulties that we've experienced in our community and around the nation since 2008, which is also the year that I decided to enter the field of nonprofit management. So timing is everything, right? Most of these collections come to us without any money, without any personnel. It is incumbent upon us to take these collections. If we don't, we're not doing our job. We don't have the luxury of saying that we don't want it or we can't take it. I do want to mention that out of the ones that I just mentioned, the Syracuse Symphony Orchestra, the Syracuse Symphony Foundation has been incredibly generous with us and has provided the funds for us to process that collection. That has allowed us to process that huge collection in about a year. Syracuse China, on the other hand, were probably about 25 to 30% through processing that collection. It will literally take us years. So I want to talk now about the current day, some of the things that we're working on right now. One of the things I know that you want to hear about is a very unique strategic partnership that OHA has put together to repurpose the site that is currently known as St. Marie Among the Iroquois, commonly known, of course, as the French Fort on Onondaga Parkway. This is a very unique partnership that brings local government, a local indigenous nation, in this case the Onondaga Nation, of course, academic institutions, and a traditional historical society together, organizations that haven't always seen eye to eye in the past. But together we're working to create a center that is that deals with the tenets of the Thanksgiving Address and the Great Law of Peace, to talk about mutual understanding and respect and brotherhood and peace, and to talk about a great, amazing, fascinating, huge part of our local history. It fills a void in our heritage story in this community. There's no facility currently that deals with the Native American heritage in this community. And it has informed our history on a local, on a state, on a national scale in so many ways. It's a very important part of our history, and we're thrilled to be able to play a part in creating this unique institution. It will contain two museums, one on the Haudenosaunee heritage, one on the life at the Mission of St. Marie during the 17th century. It includes an educational collaborative. This is a collaboration between local universities and colleges, OHA and the nation, which will be responsible for creating the curriculum and the story that's told in the museums. A collaboration between Syracuse University, OHA, the Onondaga Nation, SUNY ESF, Onondaga Community College, Empire State College, Le Moyne College, and it is run by, and we're incredibly fortunate to have this man, Dr. Philip Arnold. He is a nationally known speaker, author, authority on indigenous issues. He was previously the director of the Native American Studies program at Syracuse University, and he's the founding director of this educational collaborative. The facility will also include environmental amenities and programs and recreational programs. You know, out of the 1.6 million people who use Onondaga Park, the majority of those people are there to recreate. And we need to draw some of those folks across the street. So we will be creating a didactic landscape with the help of SUNY ESF so that people can recreate and they can also learn about our environment and the great connection that the Haudenosaunee have had to our environment, learn about the flora and fauna of the area and how they've contributed. So we have a lot of great plans for that facility, and we're really looking forward to it. I also want to mention that Daniel Connors, from OHA staff. Dan has been with us for a little over a year with our eye on this prize for him during that time. Dan got his master's from SUNY ESF and makes him perfectly poised to combine the great cultural and natural resources of our community to add value to our park system, and he will be the general manager there. This year we also will be continuing with our customized exhibits and programs. We're currently working on projects for the Literacy Volunteers of Greater Syracuse to commemorate their 50th anniversary, and the Manufacturers Association of Central New York to commemorate their 100th anniversary, as well as doing a project on the great candle making industry in Syracuse. On-site and off-site exhibits, a full schedule of both of those, including an exhibit called No Place Like Home, where we are collaborating with Catholic Charities and Interfaith Works and also the Onondaga Citizens League, where we talk about the history of immigration through the Great Migration and also refugee resettlement in our community. We'll be having a very fun exhibit that's opening in November called Fashion After Five, the Culture and Couture of the Cocktail Hour. This is really sort of around the cocktail dress and other cocktail accessories. And we will be having a secret speakeasy. So think of OHA for your corporate holiday parties starting in November for 2013 into 2014. We'll also be having an exhibit on the great photography of George Barnard, a local photographer, early photographer, one of the five Civil War photographers that were hired by Matthew Brady to photograph the Civil War. This is the first major retrospective of George Barnard's work. By the way, we have probably the largest, I think, yes, Dennis, the largest collection of George Barnard's work and most definitive about his history at OHA. But this is the largest retrospective of his work since the 70s, I think, that was held at the Museum of Modern Art in New York City. We are adding value to the Creek Walk and to the Connective Corridor with some great projects adding a walking, self-guided walking tour in the connective corridor. Our creek walk, we'll be adding signage along the creek walk that adds value to that by talking about the great history that happened in that place. And thanks to the Central New York Community Foundation, we will also be able to provide a high-tech mobile app that provides video for each of the signs. And I just want to mention a shout out to our local foundations, the Central New York Community Foundation, the Gifford Foundation, the Reisman Foundation, the John Ben Snow Foundation. Without these foundations, OHA and the rest of our partners in the art, cultural heritage organizations would not be able to do half of the things that we do to add value to this community, to our quality of life, and to the economic development in this community. So I want to make sure that that they get the recognition that they deserve. On the Connective Corridor, maybe some of you have seen our billboard project. Throughout this year, every month, the billboard in Armory Square, a very large billboard, will change. And that billboard juxtaposes a historic photo from our collection with a painting, original painting that's done by one of two Syracuse University students. It's become a very, very popular project. Everybody looks forward to seeing what the new billboard will look like every month. History Minutes, a new project that we're working with WCNY. These are 60-second, what we call docu-mercials, and they will run on WCNY programs. There are 60-second spots that are really high quality, high definition. They're mini documentaries, and they talk about great stories from our local history that I know people probably don't know. These History Minutes will reach over 128,000 television viewing households per week and will run over a six-month period. I want to thank Le Moyne College for sponsoring those. Museum films, we're creating films for our museum so that in the galleries there'll be flat-screen TVs that will have probably about an eight-minute film that will summarize the history content in that gallery. We're working on school films. That we will provide free of charge to all of the school districts throughout Onondaga County. These are films that cover the history of Onondaga County, but we're working with a group of teachers from the school districts to add state-required curriculum content to those movies. So not only will kids be able to learn about the history of the community that they live in, but they'll also be getting that content that they need in order to score better on the test so that our teachers can get the help that they need to educate our children. We're working on a couple documentaries right now, and oral history projects, an oral history project for the Onondaga Citizens League, an oral history project for the senior lawyers section of the Onondaga County Bar Association, where we film oral histories of the people and then create edited versions for films. We will continue our work with the Black History Preservation Project and the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgendered community, as well as the Jewish heritage community and the Latino community, to collect the history of those communities and what they've contributed to our community collective history. We will be launching a 150th anniversary book that talks about the 150 years of OHA through our collections. We are also working on volume two of our Windows into the Past book. These are books that have a selection of short stories that highlight the great stories of Onondaga County. In addition, of course, to our regular publications and our contributing articles. Store development, product development is an ongoing thing with OHA. We are always looking to add more products to our store. These are great collaborations with local artists and designers and manufacturers and distributors. So when you buy a product, not only you're supporting OHA, but you're also supporting a lot of other folks in our community. Our Twitter project, in their own words, this is how we teach about the Civil War through a very fun Twitter project. We have transcribed diaries from local soldiers who were in the Civil War, and every single day throughout the entire run commemorating the 150th anniversary of the Civil War, we will tweet lines from their diaries, directly from their diaries and their journals. So you can learn about the Civil War through the eyes and the words of the folks from Onondaga County who were in those battles. And of course, we will continue with our many collaborations. Look for an OHA exhibit at Syracuse Stage in collaboration with their production of the Iliad, continuing Onondaga County Public Library exhibits, and also working with Symphoria, the new symphony, to add value to their product using historic perspective. And a longer-term strategic plan. For an organization that deals a lot with the past, we're always looking towards the future. And this includes discussions that we are already having with organizations to add value to and bring historic perspective to the great project that is taking shape in the Inner Harbor. All of this is, of course, in addition to our main mission of collecting, preserving, interpreting, storing, and exhibiting the history of Onondaga County and educating the public about it. Every single day, things come to OHA for inclusion into our collection. People love to give us stuff, and we love the stuff. The stuff is what makes our collections so great. But what's very important for the community to understand is that this stuff costs us a lot of money. Every single item that comes to OHA needs to be researched. The provenance needs to be developed. We need to discern whether or not it is historically significant enough to add to our collection. It gets photographed. It gets cataloged. There's a long paper trail that includes everything from donor forms that need to be signed by the donor, by me, by the collection people at OHA, the curators, goes on to the collection committee, on to a vote of the board to whether we will accession. It needs to be properly housed in very expensive acid-free containers. It needs to be stored somewhere in our building. We need to update our computerized inventory so that we can gain access to it and other people can gain access to that. That's a lot of work. It requires specialized care and specialized individuals. And it's important to remember that every single day these collections come to us. And some collections include well over 100 items or 1,000 items each. OHA processed over 300 collections in 2012. And that's why it's so important for you to continue to support OHA. Probably the easiest and the cheapest thing that you can do is become a member. For $25 or $30 a year, you can help us with this major mission of ours to collect the history of our community. Membership benefits are incredible. Not only do you get our magazine twice a year, which alone is worth the cost of membership. Every single member gets a 10% discount off everything in our store. You also get special discounts on programs and events throughout the year. So you can make up your membership in a very short period of time. If you want to support an organization that is thriving, that is strong, that is financially sound, that adds value to our community every day in a variety of ways, that is moving forward with a purpose and a plan, then you need look no further than OHA. And now, I want to close by telling you a story, because that's really what OHA is all about, are the great stories that we have in our community. Who doesn't love a good story? People love great stories, and the story that I want to tell you today is a particularly motivating and inspirational one. It is about Mary Elizabeth Evans. Mary Elizabeth was born in Syracuse in 1884, a child of prestige and privilege, owing mostly to her maternal grandfather, Judge Henry Regal, who was at the time the longest-serving county court judge in Onondaga County history. Judge Regal and his wife lived in a very big house on Court Street, and they had a daughter named Fanny. And Fanny was kind of a free spirit, much to the chagrin of her very proper mother. She refused to wear a corset, and she wore split skirts when riding bicycles and horses. Fanny married a man named William Evans, who was a music professor at Syracuse University. They had four children, of which Mary Elizabeth was the oldest, earning her the nickname Big Sister. William, however, found it difficult to support his growing young family on a music professor's salary. So, like thousands of other people, he decided to try to make his own fortune by going to the California Klondike Gold Rush. Unfortunately, though, he died at the very beginning of his journey in 1892, when Mary Elizabeth was just 7 years old. Fanny then taught the children that it was, by putting on a brave face, she taught them it was important to when faced with a crisis, to do something constructive. And that advice was certainly put to the test a mere 5 years later when Judge Henry Riegel unexpectedly died. Judge Riegel, actually, the majority of his income came in the form of rent from many real estate investments that he had around town. And the ladies then inherited basically an estate that was made up almost entirely of property. At a time when real estate was very depressed, high maintenance costs, and at rent payment time with tenants who were somewhat less responsive to two refined widows than they had been to a male prominent judge, soon the banks took over all the properties. The family was destitute, plunged into the depths of poverty and literal homelessness. For a short while, they got free room and board in the famous Leavenworth Mansion on State Street as they took care of an elderly grandmother there while the Leavenworth family went on an extended European holiday. And the luxury and the grandeur of that house made a real lasting impression on Mary Elizabeth. And she wrote in her journal that this is the way I would always like to live. Unfortunately, that luxury was short-lived, and soon the family was back living in a cramped, bedbug-infested cottage that was borrowed from a family friend. 14-year-old Mary Elizabeth expressed her sense of helplessness and her desire to do something constructive to her Sunday school teacher, Mrs. Merrill, at May Memorial Church. Mrs. Merrill very wisely asked Mary Elizabeth, "Well, what do you like to do?" And Mary Elizabeth said, "Well, I like to make candy. I mean, it's my favorite thing to do. I always used to make it for my mother's parties, and everybody seemed to enjoy it." So Mrs. Merrill said, "Well, why don't you make some candy, and I'll take it with me to a party and see if I can get some people interested in buying it." So she did, and sure enough, people liked the candy, and this led to the Interested Outsiders Club. So for $4 a month, you could get a 1-pound box of candy delivered to your home every Saturday. Now, this was in the days before automobiles, remember. So another neighbor gave them an old broken-down buggy that they fixed up, and a farmer gave them an old horse that was sort of long in the tooth that they named Hercules. And that's how Mary Elizabeth made her deliveries every Saturday. And seeing Hercules come down the street was sort of a very exciting event, sort of like the ice cream truck became many years later. In fact, it seemed the whole community came together to help Mary Elizabeth. Caroline Stone, a secretary in the community, collected $250, no small sum in those days, from area merchants to buy Mary Elizabeth a ball cream beater as a Christmas gift from the community. It was the only Christmas gift that Mary Elizabeth received that year, but it increased her ability to her production ability 15-fold. Orders became coming in quickly. And Mary Elizabeth was too busy making candy to go out and sell it. So the Stickley brothers decided to help, and they made Mary Elizabeth a cabinet. And she put that cabinet in the lobby of the university building downtown. And this is something that really only, you know, the trusting nature of a child would think of. She couldn't be there for the cabinet, so she put up a sign and it said, "Open these doors, take what you will, pay cost of goods taken, make your change from my till." And she put a little bowl with about $5 or $6 in it on the counter, and nobody ever took advantage of her. The Help Yourself honor system of selling candy made news across the nation. Pretty soon, orders were coming in from all over the country. Mary Elizabeth, 14 years old, sold 16,000 boxes of candy in her first 6 months of business. Soon, she was opening shops of her own, from Boston to Bermuda. She opened a shop in Newport, Rhode Island, and she sort of advertised it as a tea room. She used her grandmother's fine Haviland china, and she made cakes and cookies that she sold along with her candy and tea. And it was a very big hit with some ladies by the last name of Vanderbilt and Gould and Astor. And they encouraged her to open a shop in New York City. So she started out with a small shop for a couple of years and then was doing such great business that she signed a $1 million lease for a very large two-story shop on Fifth Avenue, where she also sold lunches. And there was an article from the Syracuse newspaper from the time that said that Mary Elizabeth was serving over 1,000 luncheons a day out of her New York City shop. By this time, Mary Elizabeth was not only rolling the dough, she was rolling in the dough. By the time she was about 20, she was making more money than the President of the United States. This is 6 years after they were homeless. World War I came, 1914. Mary Elizabeth was concerned because of the ingredients that she used in her candy and in her recipes. She didn't want to take away from the war effort. So she went to Washington, D.C., and she saw Herbert Hoover, who before he became President of the United States, was the U.S. Food Administrator. And their collaboration resulted in a book that Mary Elizabeth wrote called Wartime Recipes, in which she substituted non-rationed ingredients for rationed ones so that Americans could still make their favorite meals and also contribute to the war effort. As if this wasn't enough, Mary Elizabeth also funded out of her own pocket and led a major Red Cross contingent to the war front in Paris, where she took care of food distribution for American servicemen. She took over an old abandoned kitchen from a hotel there, and she turned it into a confectionery so she could make candy and cookies and cakes and the things that Americans loved but couldn't get there, and give them a little taste of home. She continued managing her business, her growing business, after the war. She married late in life to a wealthy businessman from Providence, Rhode Island, named Henry Sharp. And as her income grew, she and Henry decided to build their dream house, a 20,000 square foot French chateau style home that was staffed with 13 full-time students. The dreams that were formed for Mary Elizabeth back when she was house-sitting in the Leavenworth Mansion on James Street had finally come true for her, and she lived over 60 years of her very long life in that house. It is now, by the way, the home of the Romance Languages Department at Brown University. In 1924, 40 years of age, Mary Elizabeth gave birth to her only child, a son named Henry Jr., known as Hank. And by 1933, she had made millions and millions from the business, as well as had her mother and sister who helped in the business, her mother Fanny and her sister, also named Fanny, whom we affectionately refer to at OHA as Big Fanny and Little Fanny. But they had made plenty of money from the business in order to retire comfortably, and so she discontinued the candy in 1933. Her other sister, Martha, who had pursued an acting career, was by then married and interested in taking over the business, so Mary Elizabeth donated all the shares in the business to Martha, and Martha continued to run that restaurant and raised two generations of her family, finally sold the business in 1977, though the restaurant continued under the name of Mary Elizabeth's on 37th Street between around Fifth Avenue. Mary Elizabeth then went back to Providence to raise her child and became a great philanthropist, patron of the arts and historic preservation. She got interested in landscape architecture as she was designing the very involved gardens at her estate, and the president of Brown University saw them and asked her if she would develop a landscaping plan for Brown University, which she did. Her daughter-in-law, Peggy, got her degree in landscape architecture from the Rhode Island School of Design, and between the two of them, Mary Elizabeth and Peggy have planted a good portion of Providence. One of Mary Elizabeth's favorite projects was taking over an old metal scrapyard on the waterfront and turning it into India Point Park, which she funded and fought for and conceived. She became a great art collector long before some of the Impressionist artists became famous. In fact, she was buying Matisse when Matisse's were so poor that she hired Madame Matisse to needlepoint the cushions in her dining room chairs. Her collection is now housed in some of the most prestigious museums around the world and in U.S. embassies around the world, thanks to her generosity. Mary Elizabeth never forgot her hometown of Syracuse, though. She was a major contributor to Memorial Hospital, which became Krauss, in addition to many other causes. She donated over 40 paintings and some rare china to the Everson Museum of Art. OHA has a number of artifacts from her early candy-making years, as well as her beloved oil portrait of her mother, Fanny. Mary Elizabeth Mary Elizabeth's philosophy was live on a green light. There was no slowing down and certainly no stopping for this woman. That green light, however, unfortunately went out in 1985 when Mary Elizabeth was over 100 years old. Ironically, coincidentally, it was also the same year that that last restaurant that bore her name closed in New York City. But her legacy lives on. I told you about Mary Elizabeth's son and daughter-in-law, Hank and Peggy. Well, they're still alive and going strong in their 90th year. We've been in touch with them for the past couple of years. Hank and Peggy have been very generous in filling in the gaps in Mary Elizabeth's story for OHA. And recently, they very graciously and generously given OHA access to and the copyright to Mary Elizabeth's secret candy recipes. OHA then looked for a local manufacturer, and we found one in Lune Chocolat in Manlius. Woman-owned business, handmade candies, all natural, using only the best ingredients on the premises, very much like Mary Elizabeth. So we approached them about manufacturing a line of Mary Elizabeth's candies. We made two requirements only. One is that they had to make the candies exactly according to Mary Elizabeth's original recipes. They could not deviate at all from the recipe. So what was not available to Mary Elizabeth is not available to them. The other requirement was that they use local ingredients whenever they could. So the maple and the maple love comes from Marcellus. The organic milk that's used in the milk chocolate is from Burn Dairy. The coffee in the mocha is also local. So when you buy a piece of Mary Elizabeth's candy, you're supporting local industry, you're supporting a local entrepreneurial business, which is really the backbone of our economy in this community. And because a portion of the proceeds from the sale of every piece of Mary Elizabeth's chocolate also benefits OHA, you're also supporting the oldest cultural organization in this community. It is practically your civic duty to buy this chocolate. And since it's Valentine's Day, coincidentally, we have a number of packages of Mary Elizabeth's chocolate out in the hallway that you can buy. So I encourage you to exercise your civic duty to buy a Valentine's Day gift for your Valentine or for yourself. Enjoy really this candy that is truly some of the best candy that you can possibly buy. And I invite you also to join us throughout 2013 as we continue to celebrate our sesquicentennial. Let us show you how much we appreciate your support. Give us the opportunity to engage you in the fascinating stories of your history that have touched the entire world in amazing ways. And together, let's continue to add value and improve our community, make some history of our own that we will be proud of, that will be worthy of our great heritage, and that will be worth remembering and celebrating 150 years from today. Thank you.
Thank you. That was a wonderful story. I love hearing it. Dave said, reminded me I'd forgotten to say Happy Valentine's Day to the group. Happy Valentine's Day. I'd also forgotten to mention that, among other things, I don't know if you mentioned this, that OHA has been the site of at least one wedding, and so I wanted to say Happy Valentine's Day and congratulations to Dave Michael and Peggy Liazzi, newlyweds. Thanks.
Yeah, that was some new history we made at OHA.
Yeah.
And it was a lovely ceremony and a beautiful day, too, so it was a lot of fun.
Question.
Thank you for a brilliant presentation. It was really so enjoyable. My question relates to the fact that so much of what we live with knowing is from journals, from letters, diaries, whatever. I'm worried about the future, that so much what is happening is in cyberspace. We do emails, and we don't seem to write letters any longer. Where do you think we're going to get the information 100 years from now, what's happening?
Well, so they tell me that you have to be careful of anything you put on the internet because it's going to be there forever, right? One of our biggest problems, actually, is dealing with paper. and the things that deteriorates. In fact, the pre-Civil War papers in our collection are like yesterday, because they were made from rag. The paper that's made from pulp deteriorates very, very quickly. So that's an issue for us. We have to transcribe those and actually make a computerized version. So hopefully the emails and the other things that that are on the internet that we'll be drawing from in the future for history will be there longer and will be more available to us.
Yeah, I'll certainly buy some candy for Mary Elizabeth.
Thank you.
When my wife was curator at the Everson, she wrote a story about an encaustic painting of Mary Elizabeth, which is either at the Everson or at the association or somewhere else, in her wedding dress. This is a very famous painting. Do you know where it is?
There are a number of paintings of Mary Elizabeth because she was quite famous. There is one at Radcliffe, there's one at Brown University. I have not seen a painting of Mary Elizabeth in her wedding dress, which was a spectacular drop waist, beaded ivory satin gown with yards of silk tulle, was a spectacular dress. But we have a photograph of her in it, but we don't have a painting. I don't know of that, so I'm sorry. But yes, actually, we do now have in our collection one of the paintings that was given to the Everson by Mary Elizabeth, and we're very, very happy to have that.
Greg?
Hey, Jeff.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I think we've all met the male version of Mary Elizabeth this morning, and you. I'm sure everybody in the room would like to thank you for the tremendous energy and excitement and vision you've brought to the local history. It's phenomenal. And the question I always ask you when I see you is, when do you sleep? And I never get an answer to that. But really, seriously, you've just done an incredible job and you've added great value. So thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. I appreciate that. And I wish that I could take the credit, but that really belongs to an amazing, hardworking, incredibly knowledgeable staff. People like Dennis Connors over here. With whom it is my absolute pleasure and honor to work with every single day. So they're really the ones who come up with all of this. I just blurt it out.
Do you have a storage facility besides your facility on Washington?
Is Montgomery Street.
Montgomery. And also, can you talk a little bit more about your budget?
Sure. No, we do not have a storage facility outside of that building. We store everything on the premises. You know, it's the nature of our collections that they continue to grow. But we have made major efforts in the past few years to pack our building sort of like a suitcase. As I said, we've taken on some of the largest collections in our history over the past 5 years, and we still have more room. So I don't want to discourage anybody from giving us your stuff, especially your good stuff. So we have lots more room where we can store things. We're just very, very careful about how we store them and where we put them, and we make use of every bit of space. We work on a budget of about $1 million a year. Our financial information is public. You can look at our 990s. We've had some very good years recently. We've been able to, mostly due to our earned income, been able to end the year in the black. As I said, we've contributed a good portion to our investment portfolio, our endowment, and added over $600,000 of improvements to our building. So we're strong, but we have a tremendous backlog of things that we're working through. So we absolutely need the continuing community support that we get and that we're so appreciative of.
Hi, I really enjoy the presentation, as a history major, nevertheless. But I don't want to be a troublemaker, but...
Oh, boy. Isn't that part of your... Go for it, Fred.
Well, particularly in view of all you've invested in this building, you're probably finished with that subject for years, but a few doors down from you is the historic Carnegie Library.
Right.
And I wondered if you've ever had discussions or dreams in the past or thoughts of the future of how that and the OHA might collaborate.
Sure. First of all, I want to say that we're far from finished on our building. $600,000 makes a very small dent in a 1906 era building that hasn't had very much done to it since that time. We are embarking actually on a new project to install an entirely new HVAC system, which is badly needed in our building and is important to safeguard the collections as well as the comfort of the people who come to our museum and the people who work there. So that's going to be a very large nut to crack. And we look forward to as much help as we can get from the community in doing that. And we have many other projects in that building. It's a very, very big building, as you know. So we're long from finished with our building. Yes, there have been many discussions in the past about the Carnegie Building. Unfortunately, the floor loads there aren't conducive to high density storage and to the weight of the things that we need to store. Also, you've probably noticed that the windows in that building are absolutely spectacular. Windows, not a good thing for museums. So we wouldn't want to have to take them and cover them up. And also, it's considerably smaller than OHA's building. So as I said, you know, it's the nature of our business that our collections continue to grow. There's no way that we would be able to fit what we have right now in the Carnegie Building. So we hope that the Carnegie will have a wonderful life. We look forward to welcoming whoever is going to take it into the neighborhood. And it is a great historic building, and whoever will move in there, I'm sure that we'll approach with finding some way that we can add value to their project by using historic perspective in some way.
Greg, can you just say a few more words about the new museum, or museums actually? I heard you say two museums on the site of the Sault Ste. Marie, and what's the timetable?
This year, 2013, will be a year of planning. The museum in the what's now known as the Visitor Center will be a Haudenosaunee Heritage Museum. So that will be about the history of the Haudenosaunee, and that will really be from the pulling from the oral tradition history of the Haudenosaunee. As you know, their tradition is an oral tradition that's handed down through generations, and so we're working with them to provide that unique perspective that they can bring to their own history that they continue to live every day. And then we'll have a museum in the mission itself, in the fort, if you will, that interprets that facility and what life was like there, what they wore, what they did, how they made their meals, what was life like in that facility in the 17th century. So we'll be having a retail store. We're looking at cafe kind of amenity there. And as I said, we will be working very closely with the nation and with Parks Department of the county to provide recreational amenities there. As you know, lacrosse is a Haudenosaunee sport. It started right here in upstate New York, the fastest growing sport in the country right now. So we're working with the Iroquois Nationals on doing lacrosse camps and exhibitions and games. And some of our greatest athletes, Jim Thorpe is only one among them, who are Native American athletes. So we plan on using the grounds and the building to capture those 1.6 million people who are using that park every day to recreate.
That's great. Thank you very much, Greg Trevely.
Thank you. Thank you so much.